We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to another episode of In the Know. Mason and I are joined by Justin Rowan and Carter Rodriguez of the Chase Down Pod here to talk about all things Cavaliers. No, I'm joking. We're still going to be talking about the Pelicans. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I did a little bit of role reversal today with Carter. I wasn't able to watch the Cavs game, but I saw the box score. I'm going to catch up on it tomorrow. And my eldest son, Jetty Osman, had a great game. So that's going to carry me through the rest of the week.
I'm also doing well. It's going to be, you know, a bit of a crowded podcast today. We're just three people short of a fun night for Tristan Thompson. I accidentally nearly cut Justin off there. I'm going to have to be really careful, but otherwise I'm really excited.
Yeah. I mean, so for the listeners, we're structuring this into a two part podcast. Wow. That's like a tongue twister right there. But the first part, you know, we'll be discussing the Pelicans and their recent drama and leaning on Justin and Carter to shed their experience of, you know, a superstar leaving and all the drama that follows and the rebuilding approach, and maybe even talk about David Griffin and his tenure with the Cavaliers. And in the second part, we'll be joining Carter and Justin on their pod,
where we mostly bullshit.
Yeah, we'll figure out what we're talking about for the second half. Once we get there, we'll just explore the space from there.
Yeah, it's there's no plan to this. We're gonna have fun.
Hell yeah, brother! Let's get started
for sure. So I guess to get started, you guys don't live under a rock. Anthony Davis requested a trade, and you guys, you know, LeBron didn't exactly request a trade. I guess Kyrie requested a trade. We can talk about Kyrie. I didn't even think about that. Kyrie requested
Instantly everyone left us.
Yes. So Kyrie requested a trade for you guys. And what, you know, when that happened, the moment that first tweet came to fruition, what was the sort of gut feeling, the gut reaction, the instantaneous emotions that were, you know, going through your guys' minds?
That it was all over.
Yeah, you just feel ill, man. It's just like, oh.
Yeah, it was like, okay, so there's already this almost insurmountable hill that they have to climb, which is the Golden State Warriors. And now all of a sudden Kyrie is requesting a trade. And of course, from there, we kind of found out the details that the Cavs had tried to trade him before he requested the trade. It got back to him. Then from there, you got kind of the disputing reports that Kyrie believed that it wasn't an issue with the front office. He believed that LeBron was trying to trade him for his friends in Paul George and Eric Bledsoe. But once Kyrie was requesting a trade, it basically was clear that there isn't going to be a return that makes them a better team. When you're trading Kyrie, and whenever you're trading a superstar, no matter how good the return is, it's still going to be a loss for you, because spare parts will never equal a star. And that certainly ended up to being true. And from there, we were already pretty broken with David Griffin out the door. Then Kyrie's out. And everyone
spent the entirety of last season knowing LeBron was gone.
Yeah, yeah. So at that point, what some had kind of felt was clear became crystal. Yeah, I feel
like the strongest middle ground between our two fandoms is really actually the spot you're in right now, which is just waiting for it to end.
Oh, God, just put us out of our misery.
Like, yep. It's such a helpless feeling, and, like, it's even worse for you from the perspective of, like, Davis might still play out the end of the year. Who knows if they're going to realize what a farce this current situation is.
Oh, he's playing. That came out today.
Oh, my God.
20 to 25 minutes per game the rest of the way is what interim GM Danny Ferry told everybody.
I am so flummoxed by this. We just talked about this on our last podcast, and I just don't understand it, dude. I don't understand why he wants to. Like, what's the upside here for any party involved? Like, why can't they just collectively agree, like, yeah, this isn't going to, like, work. We'll trade you this summer. But
for him, isn't it making all NBA?
Yeah, like, it's stats and credentials. It's that stuff. It's got
to
be.
Well, you don't get to, like, I feel like you can't really have your cake and eat it, too, like, if you're him. Like Kawhi probably would have liked to be, first team all NBA last year, but he's like, yeah, I'm forcing my way out, and, like, I'm burning every bridge required, and I'm sitting out. Like, it doesn't feel like you get to do everything you want. And that feels like, I don't know, do you kind of feel like that's kind of like the overarching problem with the Anthony Davis saga so far, is like a lot of wanting to have your cake and eat it too?
He's absolutely trying to do that. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And as a player, I guess that is what you're going to try to do. You're going to want your money. You're going to want your where you want to play. You want out on your own terms. And then if you don't get out on your own terms, then, well, I'm going to stay and finish out the season and try to keep my points and rebounds and assists and all that crap up so I can get the awards necessary. I mean, like, he literally played in the All-Star game just to say he could play. And he played all of 5 minutes after leaving the Pelicans in the middle of a game, saying he got a boo boo on his shoulder. Like,
do you guys hate him yet?
I can sense a little bit of resentment there.
Because a lot of people on Twitter are going to tell you that you're an ungrateful dick for not liking him.
Yeah, you're like, not woke. How come? I mean, if you didn't like the job that you were in, would you stay there just out of loyalty? Like, come on. Why aren't you woke with player move?
Guys, okay.
It's so tough.
Eyes are wide shut.
Isn't it so frustrating to be told that you're not allowed to have your feelings hurt? It's like my least favorite part of that process.
Let me tell you how to feel.
Nah, I mean, so it's so challenging, because even after the tough part for most Pelicans fans, I think, is they totally got it when AD said he wanted out that first day. I mean, most rational fans realize that the team has made its fair share of mistakes over the last few years, and AD, they didn't put a contender around him. Injuries or whatever excuse we want to make, it doesn't matter. They had a half dozen years to do it, and they didn't. And so he wanted out, and you sit there saying, you know what? I don't blame him. And then it's just the stuff that happened after that. It's all the stuff with Clutch and clearly trying to force his way to one specific team. And just, I mean, and now you have all this that's happening after that. And it's just everything that's happened since the request, I think, that's really soured some people, not the request itself.
I got to be honest with you. When you bring in Rajon Rondo to be the help for a top five player, you don't deserve that top five player. That's my take. Come on, you get it right, guys. Why did you let down Anthony Davis?
Oh, man. Here's my question for you guys. Leaving no matter what after the contract was up, would you rather him have just not made a trade request at all or deal with this if you had to pick between the two?
As in, like, he walks for nothing?
Yeah.
Ooh. I'd rather this.
Yeah, I think. I would rather this too. This is my big axe to grind on Twitter a couple days ago. So I've just been thinking a lot about how everyone, it's very fashionable to be very frustrated with the NBA, NBA stars for being kind of having wanderlust and trying to force their way to specifications and force trades well before their contract's up. I know everyone on The Ringer calls it pre-agency. I think it's a really clever term. And, you know, like that Super Mega Max extension created that environment, right? But I still feel, I'm very much of the opinion that even though it feels worse to have it go this way, that it's better. That these teams are learning well ahead of time and they're not getting left in the lurch. What do you think of that?
I think there's a component of, you know, let's say you do end up securing that star with a Supermax, then you have all of the financial hurdles to cross with that amount of salary on your team, right? So a lot of teams struggle to build around a regular max player. And then you have a Supermax player tying up all that money and you have to try to be good. I mean, you're looking like at a situation where, you know, you might end up being the Wizards. And even not the Wizards, I mean, the Clippers got out in front of it by trading Blake Griffin, who didn't even get that Supermax. He got like a regular 5-year max. And they were like, you know what? This is not something we want to deal with in the future. Let's send him to Detroit. And Detroit's now having to deal with the implications of that.
Mason, what do you think about the idea that even though it might feel worse, this current pre-agency environment, that the teams are actually getting the bad things?
So, I mean, I think ideal situation here would have certainly been not saying anything till the summer. But happening when it did, I mean, the only reason this really sucks, right, is because the Celtics can't trade for him right now or couldn't trade for him for the deadline. I mean, that's why this is a tough spot, is because you've really got just the Lakers bidding against the Lakers, and no matter what they offered, New Orleans wasn't going to be interested because they didn't have that top-end player to put in that deal that made it worthwhile. And so they're basically sitting looking at other – I'm sure other teams, you know, made a call, but nothing – they would have truly had to be blown away by an offer before the deadline in order to take a deal before Boston could get into the running. And so – that was a whole tricky thing, was the situation with the Celtics not being able to make an offer. So I think that skews things in this particular situation. And, you know, I don't think AD makes the request before the deadline unless the Pelicans are in the situation they're in, which was not looking like a playoff team. You know, if they're in the playoff hunt, I think AD waits and waits for the summer. But a perfect storm of shit went down, and you now are left with the mess that has transpired over the last month.
I wonder if AD makes the request if LeBron doesn't get hurt. Like, if the Lakers are still kind of like at a sixth seed or whatever, I just wonder if Rich Paul plays his hand the same way that he did here. And if there's that sense of urgency. And I'm relieved for you guys, though, that the Pelicans didn't fold and take the Lakers offer, because you talked about being the Wizards before. I mean, I understand that it's a lot of players that the Lakers were offering, but those are guys that you're going to have to pay in the very near future.
I have a lot of lint in my pocket.
Yeah, and it's a lot of guys that are going to expect like a decent amount of money, and you basically would
want to be here.
Yeah, you basically become the Wizards West with guys that don't necessarily want to be there. And instead of a John Wall and Bradley Beal, you would just have like four Otto Porters.
Yeah, I think the best guy in that package to have a good chance at a good career, I think, is Lonzo, just because I haven't bought into Ingram yet. And Lonzo is the main guy who's like, yeah, I don't want any part of New Orleans, which is
to me, it's Ingram. Like I think Lonzo probably is kind of your safer bet to be a good rotation player. Like in a lot of ways to me, he's Marcus Smart. He's got better passing vision. I don't think he's going to be as good of a defender as Marcus Smart, but he is a good defender. But like a similar guy, similar limitations, but willing to take a bunch of shots. Can randomly hit 7 threes in a game. But Brandon Ingram is the only one that kind of has the ceiling. I just don't know if he's ever going to get there. I mean, the man still seems allergic to putting on weight.
So here's my question for you guys. LaVar Ball has already been on WWE. And he's been on the air, you know, saying we don't want to send Lonzo to New Orleans.
Okay.
AD's dad, Davis Sr., has been on the air saying we don't want to send Davis to Boston. Now, if you were to pit LaVar against Davis Sr. in a WWE fashioned match,
why are you even asking this? One has never lost. Like it's like you don't pay attention.
it was nice having LaVar back. I'll say it.
Like the 10 minutes he was back, he was shilling like this water,
yeah,
like, imported from Lithuania, which is like, he's like, I'm not gonna send Lonzo to New Orleans where it snows, which by the way, it snowed in LA today and it hasn't snowed in New Orleans since 2004. I don't know, it's 80 degrees outside.
Are you arguing logic right now?
Thanks for stopping.
I just like having him on the show, man. I just like having him back. I think it was bad that LeBron paid him to shut up.
Yeah. No, I think for
that's
sure.
Bad that he did that because it was so much better having him back for a week, you know, like really burning it down. Like the audacity, you know, like some of the best takesmen I think are best defined by their audacity, and the audacity for him to criticize LeBron's free throw shooting when his son shoots like 43% from the line.
Chino Hill's Andres Biedrins there.
Oh wow, it must be said. Yeah, it's a weird, like, kind of. How are you guys watching your team the rest of the year? Like, how does it feel to watch? Like, what are you watching for? I struggle to watch for the Cavs right now. I can't imagine what it's like to watch the Pelicans.
I got two words for you, and it's Kenny Hustle. And you guys are like, who the hell is Hustle. That?
Yeah, any Chase Down listeners tuning in are like,
I mean, it's a great question because there's not, I mean, given how the Pelicans went about their roster building process over the last half dozen years, there isn't much young talent in New Orleans right now, but they've got a few guys who they're focusing on. I think Frank Jackson, he was a second round pick a year ago and then sat out the whole year with an injury because that's what people do in New Orleans. And he's been
sure.
Up and down this year. Kenrich Williams is a undrafted guy that the Pelicans signed who's been getting heavy minutes and playing pretty damn well. And everyone's loving the Ja Okafor experience right now too. So those are your bright spots.
So a question I have with regards to like your fan experience and kind of the direction of the team. Like, so Kevin Love just came back for the Cavs, obviously, and he just makes everything look so much easier for everyone else. Just because he is that kind of perfect glue guy and has that star ceiling as well. Hypothetically, having Anthony Davis out there should help the young guys like grow in somewhat of a successful basketball environment. But it doesn't feel positive.
You think it would, but
what does that mean? What does him playing on the court with these guys mean? I can't even contextualize it. It's nonsense to me.
It's toxic because they all wait on Davis. They're like watching to see what he's going to do next. They're still mentally thinking about, do I need to feed him the ball? Does he need to go get his numbers? And it just ruins the chemistry because like you notice like the moment he leaves the floor, they all start like diving on the floor and hustling and making cuts and all these kind of things that they were not doing when he's on the floor. And it's just this giant black hole that's sucking the joy out of everyone. I mean, that's my perception. Maybe the players love it, but they don't seem to look like they love it.
No, I think that's valid. And I think we saw some sort of degree of that last year with LeBron. I mean, the players, half the team was flipped at the deadline. And I think guys realized, especially when the playoffs came around, because like you look at the regular season, Jordan Clarkson was very good. Larry Nance was good when he was healthy. George Hill was good. But come playoffs, I mean, it was basically LeBron and Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love and Kyle Korver that were the only ones carrying them. And everyone else, it was like, oh, God, this could be LeBron's last game in Cleveland if I make a bad play here. And I think the pressure of a star that kind of had a foot out the door, even one that makes guys better in kind of the traditional sense there in LeBron, I think just the pressure there and the concept of, okay, this guy might be out the door can really, really put a cloud over a season.
Yeah, and I think one of the cool things that has developed in this whole saga is that guys are really going out of their way to praise Drew, and they're kind of rallying behind Drew. And you go in the locker and pretty much every interview you're like, oh, like, you know, how do you guys think you did this game? And like unpromptedly, they'll be like, yeah, you know, Drew really set the tone for us and et cetera, et cetera. So I guess that's one thing, is that they're like, hey, at least we got one guy who's an extremely talented player, and we're willing to play hard for him and behind him. And Drew's just like a very low-key personality himself, because he's not going to go out of the way to make a fuss about anything.
What's that? What's the least that you would accept in a Drew Holiday trade? Because I don't get the impression that the Pelicans want to move him, and I don't get the impression you guys want to move him.
Mason?
Yeah. I don't have a good answer, because I haven't even like entertained that thought yet. I mean, it would all come down to, and I think the Pelicans have built up enough, a good amount of goodwill with Drew through the years. I mean, they work with him through all of his injuries, obviously the scary situation with his wife. I mean, obviously family's all great now, but there's a great relationship there. And I think both parties want to do best by the other. That said, if the Pelicans end up making an Anthony Davis trade that is basically just a bunch of young guys and Drew doesn't really fit the timeline, I think if he wanted out to a team with a closer to the playoffs, I think they would humor him and get it done. That's the least likely of two scenarios. I think they'd like to keep him around, but yeah, it's tough. I mean, man.
So Colin Sexton.
I mean, it's easy to say like a first round pick and then like a young player, but I feel like that's a good starting point. But he is definitely a very strong asset, which was certainly a question mark when they signed him to the deal they signed him to.
I'd be looking for something very similar to what we sent out for him, which was the number 6 pick and then a future pick. So you're talking about a lottery pick and then another pick, and or a player who was just selected in the lottery and then another pick. So, you know, Mason's ballpark approximate is where I'm at too.
See, I find that interesting, because you guys are kind of in a similar boat with him that I am with Kevin Love. And I think Drew Holiday obviously would have more value on the market. Just because he's younger, I think he's been a little more durable than Love, and like he's just a player that fits into a lot of different situations. But like for me, for Love, like in order to move him, even in kind of a rebuilding situation, I just think the value he can bring as a leader, and just plus that emotional connection to the brief period of success that this team has had, to me, like that adds value. And Carter alluded to it earlier, with him out there on the floor, like just everybody else kind of transitions into a more natural role. And I think Holiday can do some of that too, because obviously you guys are going to get a lottery pick in this year's draft in all likelihood. You're going to get young pieces in return for Anthony Davis, and Holiday being there and making sure that those guys, as they develop, aren't taking on too much usage too soon. That the mistakes they're making are in serving towards kind of developing a system and developing a culture and an identity. I think that adds a lot of value. So I completely understand where you guys are coming from and that you'd want real assets of value. And to me, as I said before, that's the same kind of mentality I have with Kevin Love. Cause I just feel like he's a player that brings more value to the Cavs and their situation than almost any other team in the league.
So here's a question to you guys. Would you say Drew Holiday is better, worse, or in the same tier as Tobias Harris in terms of overall impact and everything?
That's a weird question, actually.
That is a weird question. Man,
I would say probably the same tier, maybe a little bit better, but not like – I think he's probably better than Tobias Harris, but not a whole tier better. You know, he's like within the tier, he's ranked slightly higher.
Yeah, he's at the higher end of that scene.
Because I think I know what tree you're barking up.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I see where this is going.
Tobias Harris type return for him, which to my end, you know, to continue the Kevin Love comparison, to me, this is kind of what comes down to when people talk about Kevin Love's trades, which is like, yeah, I'd trade him, but any package I'd trade him for that I'd want to trade him for is not worth it to me. Or is not going to materialize. Like, no one's going to give me as much as I would want to part with him. So a deal is not going to happen if I'm running the Cavs. And it kind of feels kind of similar for you guys. Like, most deals for anyone trying to pick up Drew will not be worth what you'd be losing in him to you guys. Like, you value him more than the rest of the league does, maybe.
Right. But yeah, and you guys sniffed it out pretty well. Like, I was going, like, you know, 3 months of Tobias Harris netted, Landry Shamet, the Miami pick, and I think, was it another Philly pick that also went? Was it two picks?
Right. It was two picks, two
yeah.
first.
So, I mean, that's a haul for Tobias Harris. And if Drew was able to net something similar with having more years left on his contract, I wouldn't be too upset. But
right. I do feel like that's considerably less than what you were saying before. Like, I understand. I like Landry Shamet. I think that there's value there. I don't think either of those picks are going to be that great. Like, Miami is just – I can't see them ever really bottoming out. And the talk that they were just, like, this fantastic destination, or that pick had so much value just seemed confusing to me, because that hasn't been the Pat Riley on Mo. Like, it's always been, we're going to scrap, we're going to try to make playoffs. They're going to have flexibility prior to that, and actually going to be able to potentially add a free agent. And I think that Riley's going to try to go out on top. So, like, I just don't think there's anything of high value there. Like, I think Shamit's going to be one of those things where we talk about, whoa, that's a lot to give up at this point. But I don't think it's going to be something that comes back and bites them. Like, I feel like it's going to be Raptors fans when they were being like, oh, man, we gave up Ed Davis way too soon. Or DeLon Wright. Like, I think that's going to be, like, kind of along those lines.
Okay.
I think what you'd want in return for Holiday, or at least what you were describing before, is more than Harris, which would make sense because he is under contract and probably a better player.
Right. And that was just like, Harris is the baseline. Like, that's the absolute minimum. And that's partially because, you know, maybe I'm a little bit higher on the Miami pick and a little bit higher on Landry Shamet. But yeah, I mean, I think you make a great point. I do want to segue a little bit. It's not a great segue, but I do want to segue a little bit into overall team construction. And you guys are familiar with this potential GM candidate for the Pelicans, David Griffin. If you guys could sort of walk us through what his tenure has been like with the Cavs and some of the mistakes he may have made, maybe touch on those so it's not all, like, you know, sunshines and roses.
You are talking to the wrong podcast host, my friend. Only Griffin love happens here. I do think what's interesting about Griff and the Pelicans is you kind of get the impression, because he was looking really hard at the Knicks a couple years ago too, before, like they always do. And he kind of, you kind of get the sense that he kind of wanted to build a team. The Cavs had this weird arc where they had LeBron, then he left, and they were terrible, and they were terrible, and they were terrible, and they were terrible, and then they had LeBron again. know, like there was no middle ground. There was no build. It was this very much.
Hey man, we were a 500 team after we traded Andrew Bynum. We were on the cusp, Carter.
You're absolutely right, Justin.
Die by that take.
The thing that's interesting about it is, you know, like similar to the actual Cavaliers, they were very much defined by a light, by flipping the switch and all of a sudden just being a contender. And so we haven't really gotten to see what team builder Griff is. I think Griff's best established skill set is that he's really, really creative. You know, manipulating the CBA extent to get the most out of a deal, you know, taking a guy in Matthew Dellavedova that you were going to lose anyway and flipping it into an exception that you then traded Kyle Korver into, smart stuff like that, that, you know, we often criticize bad GMs for their lack of ability on the margins, you know, teams that give away that second, like the Bulls, even though they didn't have to, or just don't really like, they don't do the details well. And I don't think that's ever going to be a problem with Griff. The thing I'd be, if I was concerned, it's just like, we haven't really seen him evaluate young players because that wasn't what the Cavs were in the business of while he was there.
Yeah. I think that's a really good observation. In terms of kind of low lights with Griff, I think one that really stands out is in year one, when there was the opportunity to extend Tristan Thompson, they failed to do so. They couldn't reach an agreement. I think he was looking for like 562 or something like that. I forget exactly what it was, but it was less than they eventually signed him for the following summer. And they elected to extend Vergeau instead.
Whoops.
Yeah, that didn't quite work out.
Had to give up a pick to get off of that deal.
Yeah, unfortunately, that torn Achilles hurt.
GM didn't see the league changing as much as it did. Like, you know, some GMs and front offices had the foresight to realize that, you know, bigs were going the way of the dinosaur, but some guys just, you know, were caught in the middle of that, and I feel like Griff may have been one of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. Again, the torn Achilles for Vergeau is something, obviously.
It's a career ruiner. It always has been.
Yeah, you just can't see that coming. Another thing that stands out, like I'm a Griff stan, so like at this point, I'm just like really trying to nitpick here. But the other thing is, after they won the championship, they went into the following season. I thought it was smart for them not to match Matthew Dellavedova. I mean, the Bucks traded away a first to get off that contract and send him back to the Cavs. But they didn't have a backup point guard or backup center until February, and Tristan Thompson broke down that year, and he just kept playing through injuries because they didn't have a backup. And Griff acknowledged it as well, that Kyrie not trying on defense was partially his fault because they just didn't have a backup for him, so they just had to pace himself until they eventually added Deron Williams on the buyout market.
That sounds wildly familiar.
Yeah. but yeah, I think Griff would obviously be a great candidate. The one thing to keep in mind, and I'm skeptical on whether or not he would take this job, he's probably turned down, like, I can't think of anybody else that has turned down more GM jobs. Like, I know people will say, okay, well, there's only 30 of these jobs. They're rare. When one comes available, you take it. But he turned down two GM jobs before he took the job with the Cavs. Denver and Phoenix, he didn't want any part of. And the Knicks, I think ultimately he wanted more control than they were willing to give up. And with the Pelicans, I guess you guys could probably give better insight on this, but I'm just curious whether or not, like, he would have full control there, if you see that that's something that would be the case.
I was going to ask the same question.
Because I think that's something that he really, really values at this point, and he's not going to take a job unless it's ideal circumstances, at least based off what I've kind of heard and observed.
Jason?
Yeah, so I know Schmidt can speak to this as well, but I think the control aspect isn't as much of a concern for me. And I Schmidt just wrote about this, so I'll let him go into the details. But the concern I would have is, you know, what kind of, this is a question I don't know the answer to, is what kind of budget is he getting from ownership? And so I don't think that the Pelicans are going to skimp, but I don't necessarily think that they're going to be as free spending as maybe a guy like Griffin would want to kind of round out the staff and all and put all the pieces that, in place that he wants to put in place. And so that would be my concern. It's not as much about control. I think they want that sense of stability that they really haven't had in recent years. And I know there's been a bunch of confusion about externally, at least about like kind of who runs the show in New Orleans. And so I, in that respect, I think they'd be kind of more than willing to give the reins to a person they truly do trust. But Schmidt, I know you have more to say on this topic.
Yeah. I mean, ownership is acutely aware of their perception around the league and they're pretty desperate to change it. Because, you know, they believe emphatically that it's not true. They're willing to commit to the Pelicans in every way, shape, or form. But they know that in order to change the perception, they have to bring in a guy who is qualified and also give him the freedom and the resources he needs to be successful. They are pretty emphatic. I guess not emphatic. Emphatic's not the right word. But they're pretty keen on bringing in a guy who's not a rookie. He's established. He's been around the block, so to speak, and Griffin obviously fits all of those categories. But you know, Mason brings up a good point: is Griffin, because he has that experience, is he going to go to the Pelicans and give them sort of outrageous number for a budget for a staff that he likes, and are they going to balk at that? The Pelicans are in a pretty, I want to say, pivotal position going forward because they have to nail this hire. And that's not only for their own selves and building a successful franchise in the future, but also who and they hire and how they go about doing it is going to continue to shape the perception they have around the league. So if that's something they truly care about, it's something they absolutely have to nail.
No, I definitely agree. I think that he's somebody that you could bring in. And one thing about him is he really does kind of emphasize developing a culture. He's really put a premium on that. Like adding Channing Frye and Richard Jefferson were really, really crucial moves in his eyes. And I think that if they can kind of get on the same page, because I think that's the biggest thing with him is he wants to philosophically be on the same page as the organization. And if they can kind of show that they're willing to work with him and that they value similar things, I do think it would be a great fit for them.
And he's close with Joel Myers, our play-by-play guy. They've done radio shows together all the time. So there's one extra.
Yeah, there you go.
They can continue their radio show just now live about the Pelicans.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think we're at a good point to kind of switch over, but thank you guys for joining us. I'm sure that all the Pelicans listeners will appreciate the insight on Griffin and everything else we talked about, bashing Lakers prospects. Everyone's on board with that. Trust me. So again, thanks. And before we kind of switch over, let everyone know where they can find you guys work.
Both Carter and I write for Fear the Sword, and we co-host the Chase Down podcast, also part of the Blue Wire Network. If you guys are supporting this podcast, support ours while you're there. Rate, review, subscribe. It's we both would appreciate that very much.
Yeah. Perfect. All right.